My name is Bob DiBenedetto, your host for the best hour of your life. That is, the one that's right in front of you. At all times. Right now. The Healthy Planet focuses on topics that will help to educate you about the deep connection among all life on Earth and the powerful effects your everyday choices can have on creating a clean, healthy, and compassionate world, which is what the vast majority of us really do want deep down. Now, those of you who have listened to this show many, many, many times know that I'm not about to leave tradition alone. Not at all. That's not the way we do it here. We're going to discuss what can be really a very challenging question to most Americans, most people listening. And that is our collective gratefulness expressed on Thanksgiving in this season, is it best expressed by the tradition that we have, which involves having a turkey as the centerpiece of our feast? Now, many of you will say reflexively, yeah, well, of course it is. It's tradition. We've always done it this way. It's American, et cetera, et cetera. I want to talk to you about dreaming for a moment. All right, stay with me here. Now, when you're dreaming, do you know it? And when you're in your dream, you're like, oh, yeah, I'm dreaming here. Wow, look at this. Pretty cool. Pretty interesting. No, most people don't know it. They have no idea that they're dreaming. And so what I tell people is, hey, when something very strange, unusual, surprising, or odd happens in your life, you need to ask yourself, or not you need to, but you will be able to play the dreaming game by asking yourself, am I dreaming? All right? So something bizarre happens to you. You see a UFO or a lion jumps at you. Ask yourself every time, am I dreaming? Now, the reason I say that is because reality can appear very solid and very clear, and we think we know what's going on. We are really clear about the fact that this is happening to me, but actually we're dreaming. And by the fact that I asked you at the beginning if you knew you were dreaming when you were dreaming, and everybody says no, except for sometimes. The fact that you say no, you don't know when you're dreaming, is I'm telling you that our reality is not necessarily what we think it is. So you've occasionally got to pinch yourself. You've got to do a reality check. It might sound like this is a light, little, simple message, like, yeah, do a reality check. That's nice. Oh, yes, my psychiatrist said to do that too, and my psychologist. No, I'm actually saying it's important. It's important for us as a society to do reality checks, to check in and see, A, the first part is if we're dreaming, but that's the less important part. The second part is if what society has given us, the traditions, the habits, everything else that society has given us, if those things are actually things that we want to continue doing. Do those activities, traditions, do they really represent who we are? Now, when you start asking yourself these questions, at first, the answers you might get might seem like bad news. Eventually, when you start doing this regularly, it's like breaking open the cocoon onto life. Because all of a sudden, instead of living the life that's been handed down to you from Uncle Harry and Uncle Joe and Aunt Murdith, is that a name? And the world around you and your neighbors, instead of living that life and practicing those practices, you're living a life that's basically who you are, who you choose to be. It's alive. It's not dead like Aunt Murdith, bless her soul. So today we're going to be exploring Thanksgiving. But before we do that, and by the way, I have an expert who is going to be joining us, someone who's known as the animal whisperer, a veterinarian, someone who's been working with animals for a really long time, who's going to give you an insight on animal experiences and behaviors that I guarantee most of you do not know. So it's worth staying with me here. And she's here to enlighten all of us. But before we do that, this is your opportunity to join us for Radiothon. So what is Radiothon? Radiothon is a time when WUSB, instead of just pumping out the free information, instead of just having volunteers throwing all of their energy into creating all these amazing shows, music and information and health and environment, social issues and the like, instead of us just sending it out, we get a chance to ask for just a little tiny bit of it back. That's what Radiothon is. So you can actually go on to WUSB.fm. Basically, Radiothon gives you a chance to give back. You pledge a certain amount, whatever is comfortable for you. It could be the cost of a cup of coffee every day or a cup of coffee once a week or once a month. And when you do that, you enable us to continue doing what we do best, which is giving. This radio station is staffed by a lot of volunteers. Now, why would you volunteer at a radio station? It's because we have something that we think is worth sharing. The DJs, they have their passion and their belief in the arts and wanting to spread that feeling and that art with you. And of course, the music that you hear on WUSB is not like what you hear on all the other stations. You're not going to hear Ariana Grande, although I wouldn't complain about that. I'm just saying you won't hear it here, mostly. But you will hear a lot of new music, a lot of very unusual music. Again, things you will not hear on other airwaves. But from my perspective, what I come here to do is really to make a big difference in the world. To be able to push out some information on these airwaves that is going to have the power to change your lives. It's going to have the power to have you look at life in a new way, to have you act in life in a new way. I was talking a moment ago about acting out of tradition and acting out of Aunt Meredith's habits that she happens to teach you. Now, of course, if you were born in a different part of the world, you'd be born with different traditions. And some of these traditions came about by well-intentioned people, but some of them were right for the times, not right for now. Like child labor, for instance. Right? Probably served them at the time. Matter of life and death. Today, in the U.S., child labor, not such a good idea. So what we're trying to do here, what I'm trying to do here, is to give information on health and environmental issues and social justice issues that are going to have the ability of opening up that cocoon, as I mentioned to you earlier. That's what WUSB is for me. And I've been doing this show for 10 years. So you can go to WUSB.fm and you can pledge by pledging. It says pledge online. You can see it right there on the opening page. You can make a generous contribution or you can make a contribution that is well within your means. For the money you're giving us, for the money you're pledging, I personally, without even thinking about all of the other programming done on this station, which is the vast majority of it, I personally have given you shows, given you experts, given you information that could literally save your life, literally save you from getting a heart attack, from getting diabetes, osteoporosis, kidney disease, from having a stroke. Information that has the ability to totally change your perspective of life because no matter how good or bad things are going, if you're living it through a body that doesn't feel good, nothing's going to be very good for you. And if you're living with a healthy body and living in a body that's healthy in a world that's polluted, in a world that's falling apart around you where the air isn't safe to breathe and the food is not safe to eat and the water is not safe to drink, that's not going to really fill the definition of happiness either. So basically, we're all about happiness here at the Healthy Planet radio program. And we're going to come back to our regularly scheduled show in just 2 minutes. When you go on to WUSB.FM to pledge and you press the button that says pledge online, you'll be brought to a page that enables you to put in all your information, but you can also put in the amount that you'd like to pledge as well as what you'd like to receive as a little thank you, a premium. When you do that, you will be supporting not only your own life, not only your own environments, which we all share, but this life-changing information for everybody out there on Long Island and elsewhere that happens to be driving around in their cars coming home from work on a Friday night and happens to tune in to me right here. This is your chance to give back. WUSB.FM and then pledge. Give what works for you. If it's $20, $10, $40, and some of you out there, yes, can afford $1,000 or $2,000 or $10,000. Make my day. So on that note, you can do this if you find what we're about to be talking about, and I guarantee you will, interesting and helpful and enlightening, then make a pledge. Remember, WUSB.FM. Go there, make a pledge, and we are going to continue with our program. So hang on for a moment. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Susie Costin talking about issues that will transform.
Has global warming finally gotten your attention? Well, it's not just about pleasantly balmy winters. Other impacts include disruption of our food supply, hunger, warm climate pest infestations, rising sea waters, resulting in displacement of millions, and much more. You don't need to wait for the government to act to change the dangerous course that the vast majority of scientists say we're on. Healthy Planet is a non-profit organization that teaches that many of the world's most daunting health and environmental problems have their solution in the choices we make every day. One of the most important actions you can take to reduce global warming gases is to eat lower on the food chain. That's right, less meat equals less pollution. In fact, a UN report states that livestock production is a greater source of global warming gases than transportation, as well as being a leading cause of water pollution and a loss of biodiversity in the world. And reducing your meat consumption can pay you back personally, with reduced risks of cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and cancer, to name a few. For more on this, and to attend Healthy Planet's popular educational and social events, call them at 631-421-5591 or visit them on the web at www.healthy-planet.org. A healthy planet is ours to create.
And this is Bob DiBenedetto, back on WUSB 90.1 FM in Stony Brook. Now, we were talking prior to our short break there and prior to our pledge request for Radiothon, by the way, which you can still do while you're listening to this show, WUSB.FM, WUSB.FM. You can pledge. We were talking about stepping outside of reality, or at least questioning reality, and by doing so, potentially reaping great benefits, because we can't just assume that everything that's been given to us is something that we want to continue doing. It's not necessarily worthy of continued practice. Now, there are a lot of things that we get that are great, and our society is continuously trying to improve itself and build upon what we've learned in the past and the wisdom, but certain things just hold on despite the fact that they don't fit us anymore. Toward the effort to help you in understanding how some of the traditions that we're carrying on today might not fit us, I have an expert in a particular field with us this evening. Her name is Susie Costin, and she's also known as the Farm Animal Whisperer. She is with the Farm Sanctuary, and she joins them in 2000. With more than two decades of experience working with farm animals, she's a leading authority on both their care and behavior. And she calls on both her expertise and her deep connections with these animals to advocate for compassion for farm animals everywhere. As Farm Sanctuary's National Shelter Director, Susie oversees a team of caregivers who provide individualized care to hundreds of rescued farm animals across the organization's three sanctuary locations. Advances in farm animal care and treatments made at Farm Sanctuary under Susie's guidance have led to huge strides in the fields of farm animal medicine. She also shares her wealth of knowledge with other farm animal advocates, acting as a mentor to many peers who have started their own sanctuaries and leading Farm Sanctuary's annual Farm Animal Care Conference. Susie, thank you for joining us on The Healthy Planet.
You are very welcome. That was a very long introduction. Thank you very much.
Yep. Yeah. I want people to understand who we're talking to here. We are focusing on turkeys somewhat today, but we'll talk about other animals as well. Most people who are listening to this program, driving their cars, have likely, if they've ever met a farm animal, or if they've ever met a turkey, likely haven't gotten to know them very well. And as everybody knows, seeing someone briefly, whether it's someone who's a person or a dog or a cat or a cow or a turkey, it doesn't afford us the opportunity to really understand who they are. And not knowing people or animals or whatever it might be and making judgments about them is dangerous. That results in such things as racism, and it can create fear as well. And with that said, despite the fact that we don't know turkeys well, most of us, 300 million or so of them are raised and killed to provide us with turkey meat every single year in the United States, 300 million. So if you ask most anybody whether they think that's right to kill turkeys for food, they would have no basis by which to make that judgment. Is it right? Is it wrong? I don't know. I've never met a turkey, since they'd have no idea about who a turkey actually is. And that's where you come in, Susie. You've had the opportunity to treat a lot of animals, to go where most women have not gone, or men, and you've cared for, observed, and you've developed relationships also with a lot of these animals, including turkeys. So I'd like to tap your relatively unique knowledge and ask you to take as much time as you need to describe to our audience just who turkeys are in terms of behaviors, their likes, dislikes, personalities, and whatever else you feel would help everybody to understand these birds who are so thoughtlessly eaten so frequently in the United States.
I would love to. I really, really do love our turkeys. And I've met thousands and thousands of turkeys and spent a lot of quality time with them. So I think the main thing to know is that every single turkey has a very unique personality, just like your dog, your cat, your child, your spouse. Everyone has a very unique personality, and turkeys are actually no different. They have likes and dislikes. They have friends that they make. That they only like those friends. They have enemies. They have all the different things that we experience, they experience. But it's, you know, not only are they're animals, and they're animals that most people don't get to know, but they're also birds. And birds are a little bit harder, I think, for us to relate to, because we're mammals, and mammals and birds are very different. I think part of the fear with turkeys is, you know, they don't have fingers, clearly. They don't have hands. And we touch everything in our world. And, like, you know, dogs come up and sniff and lick and do more things that, you know, we can kind of connect to. Birds use their beak. So when I go out with turkeys, and, like, they like to groom you. When they get to know you, they'll, like, you know, try to groom you. If you have, like, you know, snaps or buttons or zippers or something on your clothing, they'll just peck at them really lightly. And if you don't understand what they're doing, that's how they're greeting you or figuring out what you're wearing. They're obsessed with Fitbits and Apple Watches and all those kinds of things, because they're unique and they're fun and they're bright. And so they'll peck at them. And I think the idea of being pecked for some reason is scary to people. But if you're, you know, clearly when they're doing it that way, they're really just touching very lightly because they're exploring their world. So turkeys are very curious. They see things that we do not see at all. I have all these pictures of turkeys where they have their heads turned because their eyes are on the side. So they'll have their heads turned, like, looking up in the sky. And it's because it's that, like, little teeny tiny white airplane that you don't see. They see it. They know it's there because that's part of who they are. They're prey animals, so they are going to see, like, especially aerial, you know, things, because they have aerial predators. So they're really, really, really good at seeing things that we don't even know are happening. They're very aware of their surroundings. And industrial turkeys are very large. So I think the other thing that most people don't probably know, unless they've, you know, really researched turkeys, is, like, in 1929, when they were, you know, raising turkeys for food as well. At Thanksgiving dinner in 1929, a turkey weighed about 13 pounds. And so a male turkey in the wild weighs anywhere from like 13 to 20 pounds. So that wasn't that far off. So because all turkeys come from wild turkeys. So if you've ever seen wild turkeys, they are very different than the turkeys that make up 95%+ of the turkeys that are used in the meat industry right now. They're the big white broad-breasted turkeys that are industrially raised, so they're raised in warehouses. So in 1929, they're 13 pounds. Now, in 2017, they're 30-plus pounds, and they are actually grown to be that large in a shorter amount of time because we now slaughter between 3 and 6 months, depending what they're going to use them for. And it's a really horrific way of living because, again, they come from turkeys in the wild, and if you've ever... I mean, I'm very lucky because I see wild turkeys too all the time because I live out in the woods. Wild turkeys roost in like the tallest trees. They fly, they can fly like 55 miles an hour for a short distance. They protect their children under their wings. They're like the most amazing animals. They're very family oriented. They're in giant flocks, like groups of males go off and they form bachelor herds and they're like flocks and they're really awesome. So you'll see like 3 or 4 males together. And they just walk around strutting all the time. They're just brilliant animals, and they're very protective of their families. So you're talking about these animals that used to have a body that could fly and could perch and could do all of these things. And we have, between selective breeding and genetic changes, made them very, very large. And they grow very large very quickly. So they're not built to be anything like the turkeys that we see in the wild. But they haven't lost their instincts at all. Like, their instincts are all still there. So when we first get turkeys, they want to fly and they want to perch and they want to do all the things that turkeys are supposed to do. And they can do that if they're babies when they come for a few months. But even here, where we restrict their diet so they don't grow too fast, because of the changes that we've made, they can't do that because their instinct is to, like, fly up in trees at night because they can't see, so they need to perch. That is an instinct that we did not take out of them. And so it's really, really frustrating for them as they get older, and we do restrict their diets because otherwise they would have very short lives because they are built to get really big really fast, and they're also built based on the meat that we want as humans. So, like, we want, like the breast is the thing that they want the most. So they're very large-chested. That's why they're called broad-breasted whites. They've been made by scientists, basically. So they're more of a scientific project now than a natural bird. But that does not mean that they are any less worthy. That does not mean that they're less sensitive. Every single thing about them except their body shape is exactly the same as a turkey that you would find in the wild. So we have turkeys come in from tiny little babies to giant turkeys. We just had a turkey that fell off of a transport truck on the way to slaughter, a big male, and he broke one wing and tore up the other wing, and he was all scraped up and so frightened of us. Yeah, and now you talk and he gobbles, and he didn't speak for days and days and days when we got him. He's had a lot of treatments. We have to wrap his wing and stabilize it. He's just amazing now. His name is Asher, and he's so friendly and so outgoing now, and he follows us around, and he talks all the time. And it, like, his whole personality changed because they live in a situation where they have zero human contact, not a friendly human contact if there is contact, because they warehouse raised. Mm. So if you're raised in a warehouse with, like, 10,000 other birds and it's very crowded, there is no natural pecking order. There is no natural, you know, family bond because they're raised in hatcheries. Turkeys cannot naturally reproduce, industrial turkeys, so they're actually artificially inseminated. And that's millions of birds that are artificially inseminated to get eggs that are hatched in hatcheries that then go to these warehouse type farms. And so much happens in all of these things. There's some gory things, like, of course, because they're warehouse raised, they don't want them to fight. So they take off parts of the beak. They take off the first knuckle of the toes in some of the farms to keep them from tearing each other up because they're so stressed out in this environment. They never achieve, like, a real REM sleep when they're in an industrialized farm. When they're here, they sleep like rocks. Everybody gets all panicked. Like, when they first come, they're very tired. especially ones that we get directly from the farms. So they'll be flat out asleep, so they look dead.
Oh, my goodness.
It's their first real sleep, because they can't. Because if you're living, like, that would be like if you were, like, in a crowded room with 20,000 people and you got tired, you're most likely going to get trampled because, you know, they're stressed, so most of the birds are up, even in the dark. So the sick birds actually do get trampled and they die. So it's a very sad place to be. But taking them out of that situation, they are some of the most incredible animals you'll ever meet. They learn their names, just like dogs and cats. They'll run to you when you call them, and it's really, really adorable when they run because it looks like the females especially look like they're pulling up a skirt and running when they run because they run really cute. They're absolutely adorable. They'll sit in your lap. They love to be, like, just touched, so they'll sometimes just sit by you so you can stroke them. They're just amazing, amazing animals. And even if all of them are in a barn that they're all white and people don't know how you can tell them apart, once you meet them, it's more like traits that you can tell which one's which. But to them, they all know exactly who they are because, you know, they don't look the same to each other.
Yeah.
They look very, very different. Yeah. So, I mean, it's an endless amount of information I can give you about turkeys. So if you have questions about turkeys, I would be more than willing to answer them.
Sure, I sure do. But isn't it something how we can live in this society and get to our ripe old ages? And I can tell you that I have never, not once, ever on radio or TV, unless it's public radio or WUSB, heard about the personalities and the abilities of turkeys. All I've seen about turkeys is them dead with their heads cut off and frozen, or one of them, I think, gets pardoned every year, which I've always found to be pretty grotesque, that they're making a joke out of the millions of these animals that are killed every year. And by virtue of us knowing, not knowing that, not even being given the opportunity to know that, we eat them like nothing. We kill them like nothing. It's hard to believe that in a civilized society and in a society that aspires to be wise and compassionate, this is what's happening.
I know. We just actually took in turkeys from what's called the Yellville Turkey Drop. I don't know if you know what that is.
I sure do. I was going to ask you about that. Tell us about it.
Yeah, it's a festival in Arkansas that happens every year. And it's basically where they drop turkeys from the tops of buildings. They drop them from planes. They throw them off stages, and people catch them and get to keep them and eat them. And activists had gone down this year, and they go every year, but some activists from PETA actually rescued a group of four. They're named after the Beatles, so it's Ringo, Paul, George, and, of course, our very favorite, John. He's my favorite and my favorite turkey. But they're amazing. But one of them actually had his legs taped together and was dropped off the top of a three-story building. And this is still happening, and it is. It's absolutely shocking that we would do that to any living being, even if we, you know, if you don't know who turkeys are, the fact that you can see that you're taking a living being, and these turkeys can't fly. These are actually heritage breed turkeys that they dropped. They're not flight turkeys. And turkeys can't fly from an airplane down to the ground safely. So the festival is, you know, torture for these animals, and it's absolutely so primitive that it is mind-boggling that it continues to happen, and they're seen as, you know, just commodities or products. When once you get to know them, every one of them has a different personality. These four have some of the funniest personalities. Like Ringo is the most outgoing. He is constantly strutting. They're all four boys, so he's constantly strutting around. So when you walk in, he like walks around you in circles and struts. And then we've got John, who is the shyest one. He's very shy, and he puts his head like when you come in, he looks at the wall. You know how when animals are frightened or children are frightened of you, they won't look at you and like you disappear if they're not going to be able to see you.
Sure.
He always looks away like, oh God, if I just look away, they're going to go away. So each one has a really, really unique personality, and I just love meeting them. So when they came, it was so amazing to meet these birds. Because we saw all these videos of people actually, like, fighting over them when they landed on the ground, like trying to like practically ripping them apart to get them.
Yeah, and they chase them. Everybody chases them.
Yeah, after they land from someplace they shouldn't have been dropped. Yeah, I mean, how frightening would that be for any living being to go through that? And just to see them now where they're feeling safe and they perch up really high because they're heritage breeds, so they're not as big as the broad-breasted whites. They just perch together in a row. We set up these big perches for them to sleep. And they are so happy and content right now, and they're talkative, and they're really, really curious about us. They really, really like us. So I love having them. And the fact that they went through all they went through and even, like, want to get anywhere near a human being is just astounding to me.
Yeah, I was reading about... Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, no, you go ahead.
I was reading about the turkey trot, and it reminded me of probably like some Twilight Zone episode or some medieval scenes that you've seen enacted in movies where everybody's gathered in the square and they're doing festive things and they're carrying the kids and the music is playing. And then you realize that the reason that they're there is to execute somebody. And
yeah.
I saw the people at this this is Yellville, Arkansas, actually happening today.
Right.
I saw them there just as... absent, let's call it absent, to the suffering that was at the very center of their amusement. And it was, it's pretty hard to watch just that we can be that way. I know that we know from history, recent history and long past history, that humans are capable of some pretty horrible things. Witness the fact that we're killing hundreds of millions of these animals every year just to enjoy a few moments of taste sensation. But despite the fact that I know it, seeing it played out in an active community scene was somehow even more dreadful.
Yeah, it was, because it really was pulling out individuals and doing it. I think that's part of why factory farming, you know, works, because it's behind closed doors and there are just so many that there is such a detachment from them, I think. Like when you walk into a room and there's 20,000 people, it's not like you're attaching yourself. There are no, it's a loss of individual, you know, being. It's very confusing, and it's very easy to just separate yourself, because we live in a society with so many people right now that we don't even notice each other. So to imagine like all these birds living in a warehouse, they're not noticed. They go unnoticed. And even the workers have to kind of have a disconnect. Well, they do have a disconnect, or you couldn't do it. You could not do it. And it starts out from these tiny little, and it always is mind-boggling to me that it starts out with baby animals, and they're so adorable. There's no way that anyone can look at them and see anything but just cuteness. To be able to get your mind to a place where you can detach from that and do the really horrific things you have to do to get them into these production situations, and then just to be part of that, like we talk about it all the time, because there's transport accidents, like the boy that Asher that just fell off of a truck going to slaughter, which is probably the luckiest thing that will ever happen to any bird, is falling off a truck and surviving.
Yeah.
I mean, even if they didn't survive, it's probably the luckiest, because they're removed from these warehouses at 3 to 6 months old, and they are literally treated with less respect than we treat like loaves of bread. Like we would never. Like, we wouldn't ship loaves of bread where they would get smashed. We wouldn't ship loaves of bread where they could get torn open. We wouldn't do any of the things that we do with just, like, regular food products that are not sentient beings, that are just nothing.
Yeah,
like, we're more careful with potato chips because we don't want them broken when they get on the shelves, but we're not careful with these birds. So they're slammed into, like, these crates, and then the crates are stacked, like, 20 high, and you've got, like, you know, birds in all those crates that are defecating on the birds below, and they're strapped on to trucks that are open air trucks that are going like, you know, 65 miles an hour down a highway. Like that, we wouldn't do that to a product, let alone to a living being. And these are living sentient beings who experience, of all things, absolute fear, like absolute fear. When they come here, especially the ones that have already been in the industry, it's palpable fear. Like you can't deny what you're seeing. They don't want to see you. They want to stay away from you. They're absolutely terrified. And to see them get through that and all of a sudden realize, like, oh, this isn't going to be a bad thing. They do, you know, start to trust us. And it's one of the most amazing things, that turnaround, that day when you go from an animal who's making fear noises and hiding in corners and trying desperately just to stay away from you, to then coming up to you is just one of the most, that's what makes this job so great. But it also allows us to say, like, these are animals that have the exact same feelings as you would have if you were in a situation like this. Like, if you were put in a situation where no one cared about anything about you, your physical needs, your emotional needs, nothing was being taken care of, because these are sentient beings and with strong, strong personalities, and who feel and experience all of the emotions that we feel and experience.
Hmm. It's just, it's hard to fathom because of the scope of what is taking place day in and day out. It's very hard to imagine. But I think for people who are listening, and if this is coming as a shock to you, that turkeys are actually people just like your cats and your dogs are, with emotions, and they have relationships and self-interest and intelligence. If it's a surprise to you, here's the great thing. There's nothing written in stone that being human in America in 2017 means that you are going to eat turkey for Thanksgiving. Trust me. The last time that I had a turkey at my home for Thanksgiving was 25 years ago or so. And she was a live turkey. She was alive. And I had her there so that our family and my many young nieces and nephews could see that there was a being behind what they had been eating at Thanksgiving, and which I had stopped eating probably 15 years earlier. Now, so if someone were to ask me about my cats, I'd have plenty of stories to tell about them. I could tell you their personalities, exactly what their interests are, how they differ from one another, and I would love to talk about that, but I won't, because you know you love talking about your family. It's hard for me right now to not go into some detail on that because I love them so much. But so, and I know that you have had all these interactions with turkeys. So tell people just a couple of stories about interactions with turkeys. I know you've given us some already, but what stands out for you in terms of what a normal interaction with you and one of your favorite turkeys might be?
Well, we've had so many of my favorite turkeys, but one of my really favorite turkeys' name was Turpentine. He was a big Narragansett male who I've never seen, and I've never met a turkey like him. He was actually rescued by one of our members whose neighbor had actually gotten him to slaughter him himself for Thanksgiving. But thankfully, his, like, amazing personality kept that from happening because... Oh, yeah, he's amazing. So if you just called his name, he would gobble, and the guy got so attached to him that he wanted to give him away to someone else to slaughter, because he didn't even think, like, that didn't even cross his mind that maybe he could give him to somebody that would let him live. And so the neighbor actually is a humane educator, and she said, I can take this bird to a sanctuary if you'll just let me have him, and he did. And Turpentine came here, and it was just life-changing for everybody here because... I've never met anyone like him. He would follow everybody everywhere. So he was like loose on the farm during the day. He's actually has his own Facebook page because he's so funny. People would come in and just, you know, you come to the farm and visit and they get pictures of themselves with animals and do all these things.
Yeah.
And almost every picture had Turpentine in it because we called him the photo bomber. He was so obsessed with being like in a photograph, like he would stand in front of groups. We have a group shot with all these kids from a school that he like wove his way through and stood right in the middle. And they took the picture and he's in full strut, so his feathers are out. And he loved, we have people that were getting engaged and he's behind them in the picture. So someone's taking a picture of this engagement and he's just right in the middle of the picture. And he did this all the time. We had a mom that was nursing babies, a goat with babies, and he would be right on the other side of the fence of most of the pictures because people would come in and photograph the mom and the babies, and then you'd see the turkey in the background because he was so obsessed with people seeing him. He was such a clown. And he would follow us down to the hospital where we work and just stay in front of the windows so we could see him. Like, he'd just keep walking back and forth. And I've never met anyone with that, like, strong like adorable personality. But he had one nemesis on the farm, and that's what's so funny about him too. Mm. He's 45, almost 50 pounds. He's a big, big turkey male. And the one animal that he was scared of is a 2-pound bantam rooster. Absolutely terrified of this rooster, because the rooster had so much more gumption actually than this turkey. So he would cross like this invisible territorial line, and Milo the rooster, who's still here, we lost Turpentine actually to cancer, but Milo the rooster would run full speed at him and attack him, and this turkey would run as fast as he could to get away from this tiny little rooster because he was so busy strutting that he'd not notice that he'd crossed over like enemy territory. But their relationship was amazing, and like he made so many people so delighted. You should look up his Facebook page. It's called A Turpentine Turkey, because that's who he is. And just see it, because people posted pictures all the time before he passed. Like, they would post pictures of their visit, because he was such a huge part of people's visits to this farm because of his great personality. And it's like anyone, like there's places that you go that the whole reason you go is because somebody has a great personality and you just want to be around them. And that was him. So he was like a turkey that was drawing people in because of who he was. Yeah. And no other turkey will ever be just like him. Like, that's what's so great about them. They all have, you know, great and different personalities.
Right. They're beings like we are. www.farmsanctuary.org. We've been speaking to Susie Costin, National Shelter Director with farmsanctuary.org online. Now, Susie, we also have on Long Island a Thanksgiving celebration that we've been doing for
25 years.
And
oh, wow. That's
yep.
Awesome.
And it is one of Long Island's largest Thanksgiving dinners. We have.
No, I mean, it's so amazing that you're doing that. That's incredible.
Yeah. And it's so good because, as you mentioned, there are two reasons for it. One is to give people who don't eat turkeys a place to go, because it is difficult being at an event where you know that there's violence and suffering at the middle of merriment, and it doesn't make any sense, and yet they're our family and we love them. We don't want to just stay away from the celebration. So this gives everybody an opportunity to have a pre-Thanksgiving celebration and still go to their family events with a little bit of more, let's say, equanimity, knowing that there are other people out there doing this. We have live music, we have a speaker, and we also have food vendors from local establishments. And all of our events forever since 1990 have been 100% plant-based, period. And so it's just a great event. It's at the Sustainability Institute at Molloy College. That's Sustainability Institute at Molloy College in Farmingdale. You can go to healthyplanetusa.org, healthyplanetusa.org, and also go to Facebook, you could go to Healthy Planet USA and find out all about it. It's a great event. And when I mentioned it's a big event, I mean 150 to 200 people. So just wonderful. Great, great information and great spirit. So any other last words, Susie? We're on our last few seconds here.
Well, I am so thankful that you have me on the show. And I really hope that people start looking at turkeys in a whole new light, because they are amazing, amazing beings. And this year, give turkeys something to be thankful for. Living is really what they want. So
yeah.
Hopefully this Thanksgiving, they'll be both at your place in Long Island and they'll come here to Watkins Glen and go someplace where you can celebrate turkeys for who they are and not have them in the middle of the table.
Absolutely. Yep, that's for everybody. Thank you again, Susie.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
All right. And this is Bob DiBenedetto. We've been speaking to Susie Costin, National Shelter Director with the Farm Sanctuary. We've run out of time. So we'll be back again with you. Until that time, you're going to be able to tune in at 6 p.m. on Fridays to listen to the likes of Dr. Eugene Zamperone or Beth Fatteni, hearing equally interesting and enlightening information about our world and your health. And you can pledge to WUSB. This is pledge time, WUSB.FM, WUSB.FM pledge. The information you've heard today, as I mentioned, is nothing you'll ever see on TV. And yet it will open up your egg. It'll open up your spirit. It'll open up you to feeling life, because you're respecting life on all levels. Once you learn this information, you cannot forget it. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.